Welcome, everybody, to the Rotary Club of Worldwide Impact. My name is Patrick Hardeman, and I'll be your host today. The Rotary Club of Worldwide Impact is part of an organization called Rotary International, made up of a global network of 1.4 million neighbors, friends, leaders, and problem solvers in more than 46,000 clubs doing service above self, locally, globally, and in our case, also digitally. As a Rotary Club, we approach every conversation as if we were on a shared learning journey. Our goal is to connect with and hear from fascinating and inspiring speakers, often with a message focused on the power of ideas to change lives and ultimately change the world. And also, we hope to bring you a little inspiration that allows you to think about how you can make a difference yourself as well. We're glad that you've joined us today, and we hope you enjoy how we explore technology in the service of others. Today, our guest connects with us from Amsterdam, the Netherlands. Captain Alex Cornelissen is Chief Executive Officer for Sea Shepherd Global. This international non-profit marine conservation organization engages in direct action campaigns to defend wildlife and to conserve and protect the world's oceans from illegal exploitation and environmental destruction. Captain Cornelissen has participated in more than 25 Sea Shepherd campaigns, beginning as a chief cook, rising to the ranks to become captain. After 6 years on the ships, he spent another 6 years running a successful campaign in the Galapagos Islands as the director of operations. In his current role, he leads a highly capable team of professionals that spans five continents, oversees a wide array of international public-private partnerships, manages country agreements, and is responsible for the movement of all vessels within the Sea Shepherd fleet. We're really excited to have you on tonight, Alex. I'll hand the mic over to you, and welcome to the Rotary Club of Worldwide Impact.
Thank you very much for the introduction, and happy to be here tonight with all of you. Let me just quickly go back to part of the introduction that you, basically my bio that you read out. As a Dutchman, when I first started 20 years ago, I was asked to be in the galley, to be in the heart of the ship, cooking the food. But as a Dutchman, you can imagine that my cooking skills were not very much appreciated. So they quickly promoted me to the bridge, and that's how I became eventually a captain, because I guess that oliebollen and stamppot wasn't exactly their choice of food over the years. I can guarantee you nowadays we have cooks from Italy and France, and the food is actually quite good right now. So no more Dutch cooks. So I've been with Sea Shepherd for 20 years. Been, as you said, about 25 campaigns. I've been sailing for about 6 years nonstop, and then 6 years in the Galapagos Islands. And for the last 8 years, I've been running the operation Sea Shepherd Global from Amsterdam. What we've been doing lately, the last 7 years, we've moved away from the anti-whaling campaigns that some of you might have seen on Whale Wars, where we went into a lot of interactions with Japanese whaling fleet down in the Antarctic. I was down there myself for 5 times. We did 10 campaigns in total. And during those campaigns, we were able to save about 6,000 whales from the harpoons of the Japanese whalers. Because of the campaigns we did, we got Australia. There's a lot of pressure in Australia, and they actually called Japan before the International Court of Justice in The Hague, started the case to prove that their whaling, as Japan stated, was scientific, was not scientific, but commercial in nature. Now, luckily, the International Court of Justice ruled in favor of Australia, and what followed was a few years where Japan went down one time, we went down one time. Eventually, they stopped killing whales in the Antarctic. So our mission was to shut down the whaling in the Antarctic Whale Sanctuary, and we succeeded. Because of those campaigns, we as an organization were able to grow and go from an organization that had one ship when I joined 20 years ago, to an organization that now has about 12 ships worldwide, divided over a number of entities. And that means that we can do a lot more than we did before. Previously, during the Antarctic campaigns, we were able to do one, maybe two campaigns a year. That meant that all our funds would go to this one international campaign, involving one ship, and later on two ships, and at the end three ships. But the budget for such a campaign was vast, because going down to the Antarctic takes a lot of preparation, takes a lot of skill, takes a lot of money. So when we stopped going down to the Antarctic, all our vessels became available, all our funds became available, and we started doing something completely new. In fact, we started with one campaign going after what we call the Bandit Six. It was a fleet of six Patagonian tooth fishermen. They were fishing in the Antarctic for Patagonian toothfish and Antarctic toothfish, also known as Chilean sea bass. It's a fish that's well sought after in high-end restaurants, and people pay a lot of money for this fish. Because of that, there was a lot of illegal fishing for Patagonian toothfish. So when we set out to find this fleet of six illegal vessels, we had no idea what to expect. What followed actually was the longest maritime chase. We found a vessel called the Thunder. That vessel was followed by one of our captains, Captain Peter Hammerstedt, for 110 days across all the oceans until the vessel eventually ended up in storms, going through the ice. There was a long period of waiting, just trying to wait us out to see if we run out of fuel. But our crew was determined to sit this out until the end, until the captain of the vessel was so desperate that in an attempt to destroy the evidence, he sank his own vessel. He sank his vessel off the coast of Sao Tome and Principe in the Gulf of Guinea. And we wondered why, of all places in the world, would he sink his vessel there? And then we realized that this is an area where there is a political will to act against illegal fishing, but the assets are missing. So that means they do have a coast guard, they do have the personnel, but they don't have vessels to actually go out and patrol in their economic waters. So what we then offered, and talking about the Thunder, the vessel that sank, the captain eventually was arrested and sentenced to 3 years imprisonment in Sao Tome and Principe, which is not a bad place to be imprisoned in, but still, you know, we actually made a big impact with this campaign, and that fleet of six vessels is actually now no longer operating. Some were arrested, Indonesia blew one up. So the entire illegal fishing in the Antarctic stopped with this one action that we initiated. But what followed from this campaign was the international partnerships that we now have. We're working together with eight government partners in Africa. The first one being Gabon and Sao Tome and Principe, two countries actually. But what we do is we offer a vessel, we offer the assets, we offer our crew, our skilled crew, we pay for all the costs, we pay for the fuel, for the running costs, and we invite our government partners on board to patrol in their waters for illegal fishing. It's a formula that works really well. The benefit to the government is that they can actually stop illegal fishing in their waters, and there's a lot of illegal fishing in that area. And we, in return, can report on this illegal fishing to our supporters, who will then, of course, be more inclined to donate more until we eventually can go and do more partnerships. So that's kind of the, yeah, you could say the interaction between both interests, between Sea Shepherd and the governments. Now we have partnerships in eight countries in Africa, and I'd like to talk about two. In Liberia, we arrested a vessel some 4 years ago called the Libico 2. And just to illustrate how the impact of illegal fishing on these waters can be. Now, the Libico 2 was a vessel that was licensed to fish in Liberia for tuna using long lines. So if you look at satellite images, you see the vessel Libico 2, you check it out, everything's fine. But upon inspection, an actual inspection inside their Liberian waters, we got the Coast Guard on board. They went on board and they found that they were in fact not using long lines, but deep sea gill nets. And in fact, they weren't fishing for tuna, they were fishing for sharks, deep sea sharks. And upon further inspection, it turned out that this vessel had a hidden shark liver oil factory on board. And they were extracting the livers of all these sharks and then turning them into oil that is used for various products like lip cream, sunscreen, lipstick, tablets, you name it. This vessel alone, based on the catch documents that we found on board, was killing approximately 500,000 sharks every single year. So this one arrest, actually for 4 years the vessel has been detained, means that we saved 2 million sharks directly with this one arrest. And of course, the many, many sharks that would have not been born had it not been for this arrest. Now, these impacts are enormous on an ecosystem like Liberia and the maritime ecosystem around Liberia. We heard from local fishermen that the sharks had disappeared, that the fish was disappearing. And what these partnerships do, we not only protect the marine environment and the sharks that live in it, we also provide food security to the people in the region. Now, these are artisanal fishermen. They go out in a dugout canoe, they throw out their nets, and they catch a few fish to feed their family, to feed the village. A lot of these fishermen were telling us that because of the impact of illegal fishing, they would come into the 4 mile exclusion zone, which is only reserved for artisanal fishermen. But because there was no control, all the industrial fishing vessels would come in and fish inside their waters, running over their nets, destroying their nets, running over their canoes, sometimes even killing the fishermen. since we've been doing these partnerships, we now can see on AIS that all the fishermen, illegal fishermen, all the industrial fishermen are now actually moving 200 miles off the coast of Liberia. So they're avoiding Liberian waters, which is great. That means there's no more illegal fishing in Liberia, but it also shows that they've now moved to neighboring countries. And so what our mission is with these government partnerships is that we can show the impact we have in country A to the neighboring countries and their neighboring countries, and thus expand the campaigns throughout the region. Our goal, of course, is to be able to provide assistance to all the governments around the African continent, which can be tricky when you go in the Mediterranean with Tunisia and some of the other countries in the Mediterranean, but also when you talk about Somalia. Those areas obviously are far more complicated than where we're active now. But even in the Gulf of Guinea, I don't know, probably some of you know that piracy is a big problem in the Gulf of Guinea right now. And our crew obviously is very, very cautious. We have been attacked by pirates. These are not the same pirates you see in Somalia. These are bandits, criminals who will take a vessel and take its crew hostage and then demand a ransom money. Now, obviously, we don't want that with our crew, so we keep a security team on board at all costs. Nevertheless, the impact of these campaigns has shown in Liberia, again, that the fish is returning, that the fishermen are catching fish again. They are becoming bigger. The sharks are returning. And you can see that the whole ecosystem is becoming healthy again. So the impact is really, really great. And we really want to expand that over the next couple of years. We're close to be announcing a new partnership. I can't tell you yet, but hopefully in the next month, we'll be able to announce it. We're also talking to a few countries on the east coast of Africa. We have one partnership with Tanzania, but obviously we'd like to be partnering with Mozambique, with Madagascar, and even into the Indian Ocean, Comoros, Seychelles. Far more complicated politically. Madagascar alone, there's fishing interests from China, from Japan, from South Korea, from France, from Portugal, from Spain. So the interests are tremendous. There's a lot of countries that want to have a piece of the pie. What we're trying to prove is that a lot of these fishing vessels that are fishing on a license, and especially the European fishing vessels, often exceed their quota, or in the case of the Lobico 2, are actually catching non-targeted species, causing further damage to the marine environment. And by these partnerships, we have been able to arrest 80 vessels to date. So in the 7 years we've been doing this, we arrested 80 vessels. And not all of these vessels, of course, have been detained forever in port, like the Lobico 2. Some just get fined, but some also stay in port for a longer time. And some also generate a change in legislation. Like in the case of Benin, we started the partnership 3 years ago. And in the first week of partnership, we were able to arrest three illegal fishing vessels. And the president was very happy. He was like, this is fantastic. We made these arrests. What are we going to do with these vessels? And his ministers told him, Mr. President, we're going to go full scale on these fishermen. We're going to give them the maximum penalty, $5,000 per ship. So the president was furious. He's like, how is that possible? How can there be only $5,000 penalty? And it turned out that the legislation actually was from when the French still had Benin as a colony, and it hadn't changed over the years. So because of the action we had in Benin, the legislation has now changed. And when we arrested another two vessels a year ago, they were actually fined to $350,000. And the captain was sentenced to eight months imprisonment, and the vessel has been confiscated. So you can see that these campaigns, these actions generate an action in the country. And that's also what we're trying to accomplish. And so not only give back to the fish, to the fishermen that are local, who are really dependent on protein from the seas, but also try to get legislative change and to really address the issue of illegal fishing. Now, as an organization, we cannot attack illegal fishing everywhere in the world. It's impossible. There's so much illegal fishing going on. But what we can do is protect these really critical marine protected areas or coastal areas where fish is still abundant, and especially around the African continent, there's a large quantity of fish that is still available. And of course, that attracts poachers. So what we're trying to accomplish is to make sure that the poachers comply with the law and that the ecosystems are preserved. You probably know about 30 by 30, 30% of our oceans protected by 2030. There's a lot of countries that have made promises, but what is lacking often is enforcement. And that's what Sea Shepherd provides. We provide the enforcement to these government partnerships. And together with our Navy personnel, the Coast Guard, with the park rangers, we go out into their waters and we give back what is theirs, basically. The government partnerships are happy, the fishermen are happy because they're catching fish again, and we are happy because we can show our supporters that what we're doing is making a real impact. But of course, more is needed. You know, we need to get more marine protected areas around the world. We cannot just say 30 by 30 is enough if there's no enforcement. So that's something we're also pushing for. One other vessel that was arrested by us in Gabon actually caused a massive change in legislation also. It was a shrimp trawler, a vessel that was licensed to fish for shrimp. And that brings me to the issue of bycatch. We're seeing a lot of bycatch in our campaigns. Turtles are being culled, sharks are being culled. You probably heard about the dolphin safe tuna. Doesn't mean that no dolphins are being killed. It means less dolphins are being killed. But nobody talks about the number of sharks that are being killed in these nets, or the number of turtles or rays, because the impact on those species is also tremendous. The shrimp vessel we caught had a license to fish for shrimp. And when we did the inspection, we were lucky enough to have the Minister of Fishery of Gabon on board our vessel, the Bob Barker. Upon inspection, when the net came up, it turned out that only 0.2% was shrimp. So 99.8% was bycatch, which subsequently was thrown overboard. So when the minister saw the impact of the shrimp fishery and how much life was thrown overboard, discarded basically because it was a non-targeted species, he not only fined the vessel and sent it back to port, he suspended the entire shrimp fishing in Gabon. And since this happened a year ago, and since then, it hasn't been resumed. So another big, big impact that we're hoping to get as a catalyst all across the African continent. That's what we're trying to accomplish. So that's Africa. We're also working in the Mediterranean. We have a vessel that I think I briefly mentioned it before we actually did the call, a vessel that was donated to us by Allianz, the insurance company. And they've been helping us to patrol in the Mediterranean, specifically looking for abandoned and illegal fishing gear. Allianz has an interest to clean the ocean. We have an interest to address illegal fishing. And these two come together with a vessel called the Sea Eagle that was donated to us by Allianz. And together with our friends of Allianz, we are now patrolling the Mediterranean around Italy, Aeolian Islands, looking for any and all illegal fishing gear. And where possible, working with the government, with the Coast Guard, Italian Coast Guard, to actually confiscate the illegal fishing gear. This year, we did a very successful campaign, a new campaign, where we were targeting an area in Tuscany where we knew there was a lot of octopus traps. We knew that there was a permission to put out a few thousand traps every single season, and we knew that they were actually far exceeding that number. We then decided together with the Italian Coast Guard to start putting some of these octopus traps out of the water. And in the 2-week campaign, we were able to remove 7,600 traps, which is already more than double to what's supposed to be the quota, what they are supposed to be catching. These traps are now sitting in the storage, and this is a lot of traps. These are like 2 flatbed trucks full of octopus traps. They are now sitting in an area in Tuscany. We're going to be taking them apart and turning them into a product that we can use to create awareness about this issue. Not only did we take these plastic items out of the sea, we also released thousands and thousands of octopuses that were trapped inside these death traps, basically. Octopus is a very important food source for the Mediterranean monk seal. And the Mediterranean monk seal is one of the most endangered mammals, marine mammals on the planet. There's only approximately 500 of them left. And in the Greek island of Alonissos, National Park of Alonissos, Sea Shepherd Greece, together with Sea Shepherd Global, has a campaign to actually protect the Mediterranean monk seal. Mediterranean monk seal feeds primarily on octopus. So by having this campaign in Italy to protect the octopus and having this campaign in Greece to protect the monk seal, we're now going to try to put them together and have them working together. And hopefully this will result in the repopulation of monk seals throughout the Mediterranean Sea. Monk seals used to be abundant. They used to be around Sardinia. They used to be around Sicily. Now they only occur around a few areas in Greece. So we're really hoping that by creating the awareness in the Mediterranean also, that we can actually get these species back from endangered to, you know, let's say less endangered. I'm not saying they're going to be abundant, but you know, any progress is good. I can quickly talk about Galapagos. The Galapagos is an area where I had the pleasure to and the privilege to work for 7 years. I'm a permanent resident of the Galapagos Islands. Because of that, we built a network together with the National Park, to a network, an AIS network, where we installed 9 repeater sites. Now, AIS is a network where vessels can be detected. When we did this, there was no recommendation, no legislation for any marine traffic. And because we built a network, the government actually changed the law. And now every single vessel that is operating inside the Galapagos Marine Reserve have to have AIS turned on. So not only does that stop illegal fishing, it also improves maritime security, because we had a few incidents where a fishing vessel or a transport vessel actually was lost. And thanks to the AIS data, the Navy could react very quickly and get the people out of the water. So this network we built together with the Dutch Postcode Lottery, our donor. We built this about 10 years ago. And since then, it has been helping the National Park tremendously. They were able to arrest a lot of illegal fishing vessels. The biggest one was a Chinese vessel that was transporting shark fins and sharks through the Galapagos Marine Reserve, which is illegal. And thanks to the AIS data, the National Park was able to arrest them together with the Navy, and the vessel has been since detained. And this happened 5 years ago or 6 years ago. So that network is still up and running. I'm going to be going back there in December to make sure that the park has everything in place. There's constant need for improvement. So the solar panels need to be cleaned or replaced. The batteries need to be replaced. So I'll be going back there in December to make sure that the network is still up and running, so we can keep using it. The impact has been tremendous. It was a network that we built over about 9 months. It was a tremendous effort. I don't know if you know the Galapagos Islands, but they're all volcanoes, and we built 3 of them next to an active volcano. Every time there's an eruption, we always hope that the lava is flowing the other way. So far, so good, knock on wood. So we haven't had any lava damage yet, but it's very likely it'll happen at some point, and then we'll have to replace it. But so far, the network has been up and running, and everybody in the Galapagos is quite happy with it, even the fishermen, because they do know that it provides them with safety and security. These fishermen are not the ones that are fishing illegally, just like the ones in Liberia. These are the artisanal fishermen. It is the big scale industrial fishing that is actually causing the biggest impact on these marine environments. And in the case of Galapagos, I heard a story from a local fisherman who told me that on one night he heard a purseiner, which is a big tuna vessel. They put out a net like a circle, and then they put it in. These are the vessels that often catch dolphins also. And I heard from this fisherman that he heard the sound of a net going out, and he saw the purseiner fishing in the marine reserve, and we calculated how much fish they were catching. And it turned out that that one vessel that night caught more fish than all the artisanal fishermen of Galapagos combined can catch in 1 year. And this is why we're so active to address illegal high-end industrial fishing, because that's where we can make the biggest impact with our campaigns. And yeah, if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you so much, Alex. Great to hear the development that the Sea Shepherd made and the impact your organization has made in your campaigns in the Antarctic, the Africa, and Mediterranean and Galapagos. Mm-hmm. And like I said, let's move on to the Q&A. If anyone has a question, please raise your hand in the chat application and I will take your questions as they come. First, you said the success of the campaign, like driving the illegal fishermen out of Liberia to other countries, but how do you guard the international waters? I mean, there's probably another jurisdiction there. How can you roll out your campaigns in the more complex situation of the international waters?
Yeah, when you're talking about international waters, of course, it's more complicated. When we did the anti-whaling campaigns in the Antarctic, those were international waters. When you're talking about the high seas, it's not like there's fish everywhere at sea. You know, you do have to fish around seamounts or, you know, underwater volcanoes where there's still a healthy abundance of fish. So what we're seeing close to the continental shelf, so close to the actual continents, and in this case, Africa, you see that there is a lot more fish. And that's why it's so important for us to be active in those regions, because we can make a much bigger impact. Plus, it's a lot easier if you have law enforcement on board from a certain country, because then you can actually make an arrest. Because we are not the authority, you know, we don't have the authority to arrest a vessel, but our government partners do. So what we do, for instance, in case of Gabon will bring the park rangers or the Navy personnel on board. They then secure the vessel. They then do the inspection. And when it turns out that something illegal was done, they find the vessel or arrest the vessel. So we're merely providing a, you could almost say a taxi service to the government officials. And of course, for us, you know, the benefit is that we can actually save these ecosystems and help save the ecosystems. And whatever, every arrest we make, that's, you know, one slaughterhouse shut down. In the case of the Labico 2, that's the impact was enormous. Always like that, of course. You know, we don't always, but we save for every day a vessel is in port, you save tens of thousands of animals.
Perfect. Thank you. We've got a question. I saw Mustafa raise his hand.
My question would go back for the part that when the decision taken for not fishing for shrimps and in that region. And my question is, how does that really impact the economy of the country, of the region, when such a decision is taken? Because definitely when those people are actually depending on in the fishing, and if you stop such a thing, it's definitely will have an impact in the economy. Even they have to import or to see other sources. So how does that really go?
Yeah, in case of the shrimp fishery, I mean, these shrimps don't end up on the Gabonese market. They go to Europe or to the US. And a lot of these illegal fishing vessels that we arrested, they're not owned by companies that are actually active in these countries. They're owned by foreign interests who are fishing inside the waters of these of our government partners. So it's not the local fishermen that are actually suffering from our actions. It's the large-scale industrial fishermen that are basically not following the fishing permit they have, or they don't have a fishing permit at all. So the impact on local fishing communities is actually positive, because when we arrest a vessel that is fishing and has a lot of bycatch or a lot of illegal animals caught, from tuna to sharks, you name it, that means that the arrest of that vessel will actually impact local fishermen in a positive way, because the fish will actually be more abundant.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. I saw that Theo has a question about collaborations and growing the impact. Theo is unmuting now.
Yeah, I'm muting. Yeah, indeed. Alex, thank you very much for your very impressive story about the organization of She's Shepherd and the work that you do. I must say I'm very impressed. And also I realize that this is a huge problem. This illegal fishing is so big. So my question is how to get the most impact the soonest. I understood that you have per country, you have also a Sea Shepherd organization per country. Mm-hmm. But I can also imagine that the problem is so huge that you can use, let's say, sister organizations doing very similar work all over the world. So is such thing happening? Is there a kind of collaboration with people that are doing similar things that Sea Shepherd is doing? Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, we do have a sister organization, which is Sea Shepherd USA. They are primarily active in the Americas. So they have the campaign to protect the vaquita in Mexico. They're also in communication with several other Latin American countries. Sea Shepherd Global primarily focuses on Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and Africa. And of course, there's the Pacific, where we also have interest in. Unfortunately, we only have for global, we only have four ships, so we're very limited in how much we can do. But there's really not another organization that does what we do. I mean, these private partnerships are quite unique. Nobody's ever done these before, and we've been doing them now for 7 years, close to 7 years. And I really hope that other organizations will take an example and start following us. There was one interesting action that came from we did a campaign south of the Galapagos Islands, where we were monitoring the Chinese squid fleet, who have been fishing all over the Pacific. They go from Argentina to Peru and then Chile and up to Galapagos, and they fish for squid, but this is a fleet of hundreds of vessels. It's a city at light. A squid, I don't know if you know a squid jigger, they basically put very bright lights on the water. The squid come to the surface, they put the lines in, and they just automatically start reeling them in. And it's an incredible impact. And they are taking millions and millions and millions of squid every year. we did a campaign where we monitored the squid fleet and we saw a lot of irregularities. They were, for instance, forging identities. They were using false MSI numbers. They were using false AIS IDs. They were getting fuel from tankers that were actually on a fuel embargo because they were supplying to North Korea. So there's a lot of illegal action around this fleet. Because of the campaign we did, and we had Associated Press on board, you can find it on our website. It's about a year ago we did this campaign. It's a campaign we did together with Associated Press. They wrote a story about it. And because that got so much traction, a lot of people read it. A few weeks ago, we saw that the U.S. Coast Guard is actually doing similar actions now, and they're inspecting the Chinese fleet themselves now. So I'm really hoping that the navies of the world will actually, because that's what we really need. I mean, we don't need competition. We need the navies to actually take action because they have the resources, they have the money, and they can make a huge impact. So I'm really hoping that we, at some point in the future, will see that not just the U.S. Navy, but all the navies around the world will take the issue of illegal fishing seriously, because it's really a threat to national security and to food security. So it's really something that we as an international community have to address.
Yeah. The visibility you create about this problem is of course, maybe getting the biggest impact, because it creates more awareness. And
we're not gonna stop it ourselves. That's the, we know that. But you know, we're hoping to be a catalyst for change.
Absolutely. Yeah, very good. Wish you success on that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have time for one final question. I saw Andreas raise his hand.
Yeah. Alex, thank you very much. Unfortunately, my internet connection is not that good at the moment because I'm not at home. Alex, thank you very much for your elaborations on the activities that you're doing on a worldwide scale. It's really impressive. And I wanted to ask you how you actually start the whole, let's call it, procedure, how to get in contact with the country or with the government, and how to elaborate. Is it a know-how transfer, or is it more that you're going through official channels, or it depends on the country? And is there any countries that you want to approach but you found it very difficult to actually get where you want to, maybe where you are at the moment with countries like Gabon, what you mentioned before? Thank you very much.
Yeah, the initial contact was with Gabon and Sao Tome and Principe, and it was primarily because the thunder sank off their shores, and also because we're during the chase, our captain Peter Hammerstedt was in constant communication with Interpol, but also with other countries around the world, and one of the few countries that were actually willing to take action was Gabon. They said if they come into Gabonese waters, we'll arrest them. And of course, you know, with a vessel that is, in this case, the Thunder, it didn't have a flag. So, you know, jurisdiction is very shady. You know, who's the owner? You know, who's going to prosecute them? Nobody wants to burn their hands on a ship like that. So what we saw, there was a political will in Gabon. And that's how the initial conversations got started. And so what we first offered, we said, well, we're going to give you a vessel. We're going to pay for the crew. And their initial reaction was, well why? I mean, what is in it for you? And our first reaction was, well, nothing. We just want to help. And if you go in, especially into Africa, and you say, we don't want nothing in return, they don't believe you because there's always something in return. So we had to change that and say, well, in return, you know, we'd like to report about it. And that reporting will help us generate funds so we can do more work. And then they said, okay, so you do get something out of it. So you always have to have a reason why you go into these partnerships. And that's what we learned from that. And based on the success we had in Gabon, we were able to expand into other areas. Liberia, we actually got into because of a contact that we have who trains. It's a company, Israeli company. They train military. They were active in Liberia and neighboring countries to train the military to, you know, do boarding, to do inspection, how to secure evidence. And through this contract, we were able to actually get started in Liberia. And from there, it snowballed, basically. There is definitely countries that are complicated. I mentioned Madagascar. It's a country we'd very much like to be active in, but there are so many fishing interests around Madagascar that it's complicated. We never really approach fisheries because fisheries are known to, I wouldn't say to be corrupt, but you know, they are not the easiest organization to get into a country through, because there is definitely some interests that are linked to the fishing industry. So we always try to work with Ministry of Defense, and the Ministry of Defense, they only care about national security. And so it's that formula actually has worked really well for us.
Thank you so much. Good final question, elaborate answers. Thank you, everybody, for your questions, for joining us today in the recording. You may be hearing this on your favorite podcast service, watching it on our YouTube channel, or viewing it on our club's website. If the latter is the case, we'll hope you keep scrolling down a little bit further to find our discuss section. You're very welcome to comment there on what you think of this program, to reply to other people's comments. And it's one of the ways we, as members of an online asynchronous club, collaborate and share ideas with each other. With that, I'd like to thank Captain Alice again for being here with us. And I want to turn it back to you, the mic, for one last word. So, Captain, the floor is yours again to close the meeting.
Well, thank you very much. Of course, Rotary Club for us is, of course, a very important platform. And I really hope that in the future we'll be able to do more together with Rotaries around the world to not only to help us, of course, you know, get funding, because that's always very welcome, but also to help us create awareness and to spread the message that, you know, what we're doing is very important and we need people to get behind it. And we need people to rally their governments to also do something about the impact of illegal fishing, because it's a problem that affects us all. And it's a problem that we urgently need to address.
With that being said, I think worldwide impact says enough. So I think we find a good platform to share your story. And yeah, hope to see you soon. And everybody, thanks again. And we'll see you next time.